96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period, both in person and around the globe.
It has been an incredible year of current events. The inauguration of a non-politician as president of the United States, the term fake news becoming a common attack phrase for the Fourth Estate, from politics to protest. This was a year that kept us glued to TV, radio, newspapers, and of course, social media. But what were the OMG stories that took our breath away? We're talking about them tonight. My guests are Nicole Williams, Democratic strategist and member of the Prince George's County Democratic Central Committee, James Wright, political writer for the Afro-American newspaper, and Avis Jones DeWeaver, political analyst and author of How Exceptional Women Lead. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Lots to get to. Thank you all for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, boy. I tell you, a little slow on the draw there, James. All right. Let me see if I can wake James up with something.
We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides.
The fight over the removal of Confederate statues took a deadly and violent turn in Charlottesville, Virginia, this August. President Trump said both sides were to blame during a Unite the Right rally organized by white nationalists and other far-right groups. Of course, a man connected to a white supremacist group plowed his car into a group of counter-protesters walking near the rally. Heather Heyer was killed, and more than a dozen folks were hurt. This, arguably, in my opinion, was the OMG story of the year. Your thoughts about that, Nicole?
The story, I feel like we've just gone back about 50 years where you have the president of the United States justifying racism and hatred amongst people of color and justifying the senseless actions that resulted in the death of a young woman who was just basically exercising her First Amendment rights. I mean, it's just indescribable and just amazing that this type of rhetoric is okay and even being said in 2017. So,
yeah, it is. Avis, are we still hurting from this incident?
You know, I think we're still hurting, but the problem is there are so many incidents. I mean, there are so many racist events or racist statements that come out of this person's mouth. The latest sort of alleged statements in terms of supposedly his statement that all people from Haiti have AIDS and people from Nigeria don't want to go back to their huts. I mean, this man has, from the very beginning of his rise on the political scene in terms of his championing of birtherism, has characterized himself to be racist in chief and not commander in chief.
What has this kind of rhetoric done to America, James? Has this essentially said, well, I told you so, and now here we are? Or is it surprising people?
In 1980, Rosalynn Carter was campaigning with her husband, Jimmy, for re-election. And she was asked by a reporter, why should people not vote for Ronald Reagan? And Ms. Carter said, people shouldn't vote for Ronald Reagan because he makes me feel comfortable with my prejudices. Mm. And the thing is that Donald Trump has made white people very happy to be white and to justify white supremacy just at a time when we're becoming a more multicultural nation. The conversation is becoming more, diverse. And then he turns around here and he basically winks his eye at what happened at Charlottesville and all the ridiculous, crazy stuff like endorsing, of all God's people, Roy Moore for the Alabama Senate seat. So, you know, you use the term racist in chief, ditto.
Yeah, but let's be clear. You said, you know, making people feel good about being white and white supremacy. I would argue that the two are not the same. that you can be white. You can be. There's nothing wrong with being a white person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not every white supremacist or not every white person is a white supremacist.
That is true.
So let's be clear. I don't want to get any mail from, the white folks that are supporting, the kinds of work that Heather Heyer and others were doing against, the neo-Nazis and the like. But with that said, does the president and his comments just put us in a position to realize what black folks have been saying for generations, that racism is as American as apple pie?
It is. I mean, it's a situation where there have been advancements with African Americans over the years, but we still are at a place where there isn't 100% equality. And I think this year has clearly shown that across the spectrum, whether we're talking about Charlottesville or whether we're talking about the administration's reactions to Puerto Rico and the hurricanes there, or whether you're talking about, the removing of Confederate statues and symbolisms of the Confederacy. I mean, there's just symbol after symbol after symbol that clearly shows that there's more that we need to do as a country. And we need to not be afraid of having these difficult conversations with one another, having these conversations amongst each other as African Americans, but also having these conversations amongst people, white people and brown people and black people. We need to be having these conversations because that's how you kind of deal with some of these issues. And that's how you kind of stem the racism and open people's minds up, if they're willing to be open, if they're willing to have that conversation.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're taking a look back at the OMG stories of 2017. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open.
Don't have a fight with me in the hall. Please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear my children, please come in. On everything. I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now.
Harvey Weinstein. That's the Hollywood mogul recorded by an actress and model allegedly trying to force her to come to his room for sex. He was just one of dozens of high-profile men accused of sexual harassment, including NBC News anchor Matt Lauer, actor Kevin Spacey, Michigan Congressman John Conyers, Alabama Senate candidate Roy Moore, and hip-hop music mogul Russell Simmons. And we go on and on and on. Too many to mention. James, what has happened in 2017 as it relates to sexual harassment?
Well, first of all, let me just say that I'm very happy to be on this show with two lovely young ladies. Oh, I'm sorry. That's sexual harassment.
No, it is
not. This conversation.
Just stay on the other side of that table. Okay. How about that?
It's getting to a point where the real issue is being overglossed. Women being mistreated and looked down upon in our society. And what is happening is it's become a thing to be, oh, I was accused of sexual harassment or that sort of thing, instead of focusing on the real issue at Harold, which is inequality in pay wages and in promotions and things like that. They're focusing on making it a media thing, which I don't agree with at all.
But can we talk about both? I mean, can't we, on one hand, talk about the issue of sexual harassment and badly behaving men, and also talk about pay equity and equity in hiring and gender and racial diversity in the workplace? I don't think that these two issues are mutually exclusive.
They can, in fact, be linked. I mean, they can, in fact, be linked because, if you are in a position of power, okay, and you are someone who has the ability to say yay or nay with regards to whether or not someone gets a promotion, with regards to whether or not someone gets hired, with regards to whether or not someone gets blackballed entirely from an industry, that is economic power that you have over that woman. So when you engage in this type of activity, it is inextricably linked to her ability to be able to take care of herself economically or be vulnerable to you, both sexually and economically. That's really, to me, at the baseline of this. It's not either or. It's really both at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think we do need to continue this conversation because, like you said, it does it's a symbol of, like you said, that power that men feel as though that they have over women. Like, you're here simply because I have allowed you to be here. And therefore, in compensation of that, you need to do whatever it is that I ask you to do, even if it's demeaning to you as an individual. I mean, these men that have engaged in this behavior would never ask this of their daughter, would never ask this of their sister. Yes. If someone did this to their mother, they would be up in arms. This is ridiculous. And so I think we do need to continue to have this conversation and call these folks out.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the OMG stories of 2017. What surprised you? What shocked you this year when it comes to the big stories of 2017? Let me go to the phone lines. Walter, calling from Northeast D.C. Walter, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening, everybody.
How are you?
Well, we know that Fred Trump is a bona fide bigot. And his son down the road and his son. So we know that the race in the chief starts it from father to son. Mm-hmm. But when you can get away with what he said and also calling grown men SOBs, but then you're going to protect the hate groups, we knew what we got ourselves into. And the sad thing is, we had two people that we could have voted in, but people wanted a man instead of a woman. So I'm sorry to say that we got what we asked for. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Walter. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the OMG stories of 2017. On my Facebook page, Yolanda says, black women have been reporting sexual harassment for eons. Unfortunately, we are viewed as asking for it. And she's off her soapbox. That's what she said. Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Well, I mean, obviously, black women have had to deal with this forever. Let's just be very real about it. You know, we come from a history in terms of chattel slavery in which black women did not have dominion, obviously, over our own bodies, as neither did black men. And so this issue of sexual harassment or, and let me just say beyond that, rape of black women mm-hmm. has been normalized in our culture. And I think what she's mentioning is exactly right. All of these negative stereotypes over the years have been developed around black women, that we are sexually promiscuous, that we are somehow sort of so voluptuous that somehow we are asking for it, just being who we are. And so, yeah, we don't have the same sort of, we don't get the same sort of sympathy, I guess I would argue, from the broader culture when we are victimized, quote unquote, in this way. Instead, it really does seem to be that white womanhood is privileged when it comes to these issues. When they are perceived as being the victims of sexual harassment, it's a tragedy. When it's black women, yeah, I think the question often is, what did she do to deserve that treatment?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the OMG stories of 2017. Let's talk to Mansa. Mansa calling from Capitol Heights. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, how are you? Go right ahead.
All right. I want to make two quick points.
Go ahead.
The first one is, I think what is being exposed is this secret society culture that's always been around us, that everyone never wanted, well, was forbidden to expose. So now it's being exposed, and this is the way it's being exposed. And they do a whole lot of satanic practices, and they take advantage of men, women, and children.
What?
And they do a lot of other satanic rituals.
Okay, Mansa, you lost me there, but thank you so much for listening. Real quick, and I think we should. I'm not sure what he was talking about, but the other thing that is important, and I just got a text about this. It's not just sexual harassment; it is sexual assault, because as we have seen, for example, in the allegations against Russell Simmons and some others, that it wasn't just a leering look, a word, but it was where someone put their hands or forced them into unwanted sex.
Well, see, the thing is that men get a certain position, insecure men, let me say it this way, get a certain position of power, and money, and they decide that women are objects, mm-hmm. whether it's their wives or their co-workers or the women that work under them. That is wrong, and that is where we men have to step up and say that is wrong.
Right. Yeah,
mm-hmm. We've got so many issues, and I don't want to forget about them. And we've got some local issues as well that we need to talk about. And one of them, which is really, really egregious, is the Prince George's County sexual molestation case that carried over from 2016 into 2017. We also had the case in Charles County where a school aide is accused of molesting over 40 students. I've got about a minute left, and of course we can continue this conversation on the other side. But Avis, what is going on? Are we finding these things out because now parents are paying more attention?
You know, I am just saddened and shocked and heartbroken that our children are victimized in this way. And I don't know, really, maybe we're at a point now in our culture where people are seeing that this is a moment where we can be more open about this, because oftentimes people are shamed into mm-hmm. silence. It's not that I don't believe for one second that things are happening now at a faster pace or a more common rate than they have in the past. I just think we're at a moment now where people are finally understanding that they can talk about it and be heard and be believed. And at least I can be grateful for that. But it just hurts my heart to think that these children have been subjected to this type of violation over and over and over again. It's just unbelievable.
Nicole, your thoughts about it?
Yeah, I mean, it's good that these things are coming out. I'm happy that children are starting to feel comfortable going to a parent or to a teacher. Or
parents are checking phones and seeing the kinds of material that these wayward adults are sending to the children. The difficulty is, and we can continue this on the other side, but I would argue the difficulty is they find out too late.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. After the fact.
Yeah, we're going to continue this conversation on the other side. If you're on the line, Chris from Hyattsville, Carla from Upper Marlboro, and Christopher from Largo, please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program as we continue to look back at the OMG stories of 2017. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the OMG stories of 2017. My guests are Nicole Williams, Democratic strategist and member of the Prince George's County Democratic Central Committee, James Wright, political writer for the Afro-American newspapers, and Avis Jones DeWeaver, political analyst and author of How Exceptional Women Lead. The lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Wanted to pick back on that conversation we were having before the break. James, we've got the allegations as well as a conviction of sexual molestation of children, dozens of them. And these people are, or were, I should say, in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Look, what you have is, at the particular time, lax security checks in terms of the people who were coaching and being in the school building. You also have a situation where administrators just fell asleep at the wheel and they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. And listen, and look, you can't tell me that one kid didn't come up and say something to somebody in those school buildings. You can't tell me that. What it is I don't think they really took that young person seriously and thought it would go away. And that's got to stop.
Well, and actually, there was a case, and I don't have the details in front of me, but there was another case in Maryland where a student actually did share the photographs that were sent to him by a teacher.
Oh, God.
And he shared them with his buddies. And that's how it came out. Female teacher. And that's how it came out. And so these things do happen. And in that particular case, if I remember it correctly, nothing happened to him. In other words, there was no hands-on activity. There was no sexual interaction because he shared the information with a friend first, and that's how it did come out. And so a student saved, and a teacher out of the classroom and accused of inappropriate behavior. One other thing that we should talk about also when you're talking about what appears to be really, really inappropriate, the grade scandal, not only in Prince George's, but also in Ballou High School. And we could argue that this isn't the last that we're going to hear about it locally or nationally. Your thoughts about it, Nicole?
I mean, the couple things. One, I was talking to a teacher, older woman who's actually now retired out of the Prince George's County school system, and she was sharing with me that this is something that has actually been going on for years and years and years within the school system. I think the egregious part is that, one, that the administration tried to, one, state that this was not occurring. Then you have the state audit that was done by the governor that shows that it was. And then what makes it even worse is that you have an internal audit that was done 2 years ago by the administration that showed that this was going on. And apparently either no one read the audit or they read it, but no one did anything about it. And it was just sitting there. And so that to me is the most egregious part, that one, you're stating you didn't know anything about it, but clearly your staff did an audit that showed that this was going on 2 years ago. So which story is the right story? That's my question.
Who's responsible for this, James?
Again, I point to the administrators for not doing their job, not doing what they are paid to do, and not what they were taught when they were getting their degrees. But also, I think we have to look at the political structure on this. We can't allow this pass, you know, just passing students. We've got to really prepare our students for the 21st century, and this is not the way to do it. That's why we have to crack down on this, and I agree with what Nicole said.
Do parents play a role with this?
I think it's a lot. I think it's parents to some degree, but it's also a broader sort of high stakes testing approach to public education in this nation, period. The way in which we approach public education really is not about teaching children critical thinking skills. It's really not about making sure children are sort of grounded in a foundation that will pay off for them years down the line. Mm-hmm. It's about rote memorization and being able to score well on a test. And when your job is on the line based upon whether or not that test score moves up or down, and at the same time layer that with the fact that we have schools that are the way we school in this country connected to property taxes, so you have a situation where some schools are disadvantaged just in terms of the students who are at that school, so they have a more steep mountain that they have to climb. You have built into that system unfortunate incentives to try to sort of, I guess, fudge the line a little bit to make things look better than they are, because you're already built, you've already dealt a disadvantaged deck from the beginning. And so unfortunately, who ends up paying the ultimate price at the end of the day? It's the children, right, who aren't receiving the education that they need to be able to really flourish in the future.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Chris calling from Hyattsville. Thanks for calling, Chris. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I just really wanted to chime into the conversation.
Go right ahead. What's on your mind?
I guess my view or my concern is seems to be that women seems to be given a lot of leeway in America, to the extent that, I mean, we want to blame the men for everything that is going on. We're talking about sexual harassment, women coming out and talking about sexual harassment. But there's really no one talking about sexual harassment by women, by female, against other females. I mean, sexual harassment by females is also going on.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the main focus now is sexual harassment by men, but that's really not the main issue.
Well, let me stop you here, Chris, because I think the truth of the matter is that the sexual harassment issue, you're correct, is not just men harassing women, although that those are the lion's share of the cases. But as we've seen in the Kevin Spacey situation, he was accused of harassing another man. The actor. Yes, you can.
The director of remember the director of. Him.
There was another one.
Yeah, yeah,
he was an agent who was accused of harassing the actor who is on the comedy cop show. Also, there are actually cases that and news stories about women harassing women. These have not obviously risen to the top as have these cases related to men harassing women, but certainly, I think you do have some validity to the point that you're making. And thank you so much for sharing with us. We can continue to talk about this if you want to at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you want to share what your OMG story of 2017 happens to be, we're certainly welcome to. Invite you to give us a call. But in the interim, here's our next issue.
When you go down and take a knee or any other way, you're sitting, essentially, for our great national anthem.
And
I accept this award not for myself, but on behalf of the people. Because if it were not for my love for the people, I would not have protested. And if it was not for the support from the people, I would not be on this stage today. With or without the NFL's platform, I will continue to work for the people because my platform is the people.
The football players and the president, President Trump, not being shy and criticizing the NFL and its players for protesting during the national anthem during the course of this football season. Those protests actually began last year with 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick over police brutality and social justice. But in 2017, this issue has exploded. James.
You know, President Trump really showed his true colors. When he referred to players in the NFL and their parents as SOBs. Now, that's not being presidential, but, you know, being presidential, I guess, is not his thing. And I believe that instead of encouraging a discussion of this like President Obama did, he actually, again, took a side. And he took the wrong side, and therefore he has just created such tension in this country that I really don't think he's showing leadership on this issue or any other.
I mean, first of all, I feel like as president, you should have bigger things to worry about than whether or not people are kneeling or standing when they're doing the national anthem at a football game. Like there's North Korea, there's the Middle East. I feel like there's bigger things going on that you need to be worried about. But second of all, one, they have a First Amendment right to express themselves however the way they wish to express themselves. Secondly, it's my understanding that when Colin Kaepernick and one of his teammates first decided to do this, they actually consulted with another one of their teammates who was a former military, who was formerly in the military, about the best way to protest and to express themselves that would not be offensive to people in the military.
Because at first they sat down.
Right. At first they sat down, and then they were advised by their by the other player who was in the military that it is more respectful to take a knee than it is to sit down, which is what started the kneeling. And so I feel like when people are talking about this, I feel like, one, you need to read, you need to do your history and understanding about where this actually came from, because they weren't trying to be disrespectful to the flag. They weren't trying to be disrespectful to the military personnel. And so now you have people boycotting the NFL because people are taking a knee, boycotting the NFL because Trump is talking about this. And I don't know whether to watch the game, not watch the game, support the team, not support the team. It's just, it's created all types of confusion, and it's unnecessary. Worry about North Korea.
Avis.
As someone who hasn't stood for the national anthem in over 20 years, I can say that the issue here really doesn't have to do with the flag. It doesn't really have to do with the national anthem. And for those people who continue to want to bring it back to that, they are either completely idiots or they're just lying and they're trying to avoid the truth. We know from the beginning that Colin Kaepernick did this specifically to cause attention to the sort of injustices that we've seen with regards to police killing black people with impunity.
Right.
That's what these protests were about. And what we saw this person who inhabits 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue do was he rebranded the situation. And he did, as you mentioned, there are other things. At the very time that he was attacking black men and their mothers through his profanity, at the very time that that was happening, you had people dying in Puerto Rico.
Right.
And he was negligent in his duties, and he still is negligent in his duties in terms of making sure that the people of Puerto Rico survive a tragedy that they are still trying to work their way out of. And so this was racist. This was a diversion from the reality. And this was a way in which, once again, this man doesn't believe in dog whistles. He believes in foghorns. And this was the way in which he was sending a huge message to his racist base that, once again, he is one of them. And he, as being one of them, he is against people of color. And that, and those people, this time, professional athletes, were just the latest victims.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tia, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Tia. Turn your radio down. What's on your mind? Tia, are you there?
You.
Hello?
Yes, turn your radio down. Go right ahead, please.
I'm on another phone.
Tia, can you hear me? Tell you what, give me a call back when you're ready to talk. I'm going to take a break. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the OMG stories of 2017, and we're not done yet. More to come. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a moment. Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. We're continuing our discussion about the OMG stories of 2017 with Nicole Williams, Democratic strategist and member of the Prince George's County Democratic Central Committee, James Wright, political writer for the Afro-American newspaper, and Avis Jones DeWeaver, political analyst and author of How Exceptional Black Women Lead. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to our next topic. The worst mass shooting in U.S. history occurred this year when 64-year-old gunman Stephen Paddock opened fire at the Route 91 Harvest Country Music Festival on October 1st. 58 people were killed, more than 500 wounded, when Paddock began firing on the crowd of around 22,000 from the 32nd floor of the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino. Nicole, what has happened to this story?
This story, I think we are starting to get to a place in our society where this story is becoming the norm. And so we are now becoming immune whenever these mass shootings occur, to the point where we know that our government isn't going to do anything. We know Congress isn't going to enact any new legislation to prevent these types of things from occurring because they, you know, get so many campaign donations from the NRA. And so it's unfortunate. I mean, they even talked about the whole buck stop thing. You're thinking, okay, it seems like this is a nonpartisan issue to ban these buck stops. And then once again, nothing happens. Once again, nothing happens. You know, we have school children being executed. We have people at a country music concert being executed. People at a nightclub having a good time being executed.
Church in Texas.
And once again, we do not have the political fortitude in this country to say that this needs to stop. That's what's going on.
Avis?
Yeah. And in addition to that, I would argue that we also, as a nation, have great difficulty calling white men terrorists. period. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I don't understand how you can interpret this any other way. And you look at what happened in terms of the specific reaction, once again, by this administration after this occurrence, the same sort of NRA sort of byline, oh, it's too soon, we don't want to politicize this, and also no one's calling him a terrorist or talking about changes that need to be made to keep guns out of the hands of white identity extremists or just plain crazy ass white. Sorry, crazy white people.
No, we're on series.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. My bad. Okay. But, you know, the second that you have something happen and the person is, for example, a Muslim, all of a sudden, you know, oh my God, mm-hmm. we got to stop these immigration. We got to change our immigration laws. We have to do all this. And so it is, once again, an example of this president acting very differently when white men have very dangerous, deadly behavior than he does when other people engage in murderous behavior.
James.
Harold, my father was a member of the NRA. Mm-hmm. And my late father, who passed away in 2003, but the NRA that he belonged to was dedicated more to gun education, gun awareness, and protecting the Second Amendment so that everyone would understand what it really meant. I don't know whether this is my father's NRA. Mm. And I think the members of Congress need to stop being scared of this NRA.
I think that Avis makes a really, you know, interesting point, piggybacking on what Nicole said as well. The anniversary of the Sandy Hook shooting was this month. And there was some coverage of that anniversary, mm-hmm. but I find it curious that, first of all, we still don't know what Stephen Paddock's motive was, mm-hmm. specific right. motive. And during the discussions about the Sandy Hook shooting, that these two issues really didn't touch. It was a day and a half. It was part of the news cycle, and then it disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so.
And what was really disgusting is not only did it disappear, you had this whole contingent that went on this tirade trying to say that the whole thing was a hoax.
Yes.
I mean, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you had all these super, uber right-wing people trying to deny the reality that this happened. And then with the specific issue in Vegas, you know, you have all of it. They're going to study this man's brain to see, because something must have been wrong right. with him. But if someone who is Islamic would have done that, that would have been the last thing they would have been looking at. They just would have said, oh, my God, he's a
check
terrorist.
His politics.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Those are the same people, Avis, that are probably saying the Holocaust was a hoax.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. I completely agree.
There you go. Well, here we go. We have now probably a little bit of what some may actually consider fake news.
The evolving and eroding level of trust as a result of this situation and a series of other questionable instances is what led the president to ask for General Flynn's resignation.
National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, he was the first to leave the administration early this year. He was forced to resign on February 13th, just a few weeks after President Trump was inaugurated. He lied to the vice president about contacts with Russia's U.S. ambassador. And of course, he later pled guilty to lying to FBI agents about the contacts. This investigation began with Michael Flynn mm-hmm. this year, but now it has grown, it has expanded, and where we are right now is an attack on the special prosecutor, Robert Mueller. I don't think that, does anybody remember any of those same kinds of attacks against the special prosecutor during Watergate, unless they, of course, did come from Richard Nixon?
No, you didn't have this during Watergate. You didn't even have this during when Clinton was president, during the whole, you know, Whitewater investigation and those types of things. I mean, this is very unprecedented. And Mueller has a stellar track record of his work previously in the Department of Justice and with the FBI and things along those lines. And this Flynn thing, I mean, it's interesting to see how this story is going to continue to evolve. But the interesting part, at some point, I need folks to listen to President Obama, because President Obama warned the Trump transition team about Flynn during the transition period. Yep. They warned him. They warned them. And they decided, oh, it's Obama. We're going to ignore what he said. No, at some point, y'all need to start listening to him.
Well, they were listening to the Russians all throughout the campaign, so I'm not surprised. Let's just keep it real.
Where is this going to go, Avis, next year? Because for those who aren't old enough to remember Watergate, some would argue, well, when is this going to end? When is there going to be a decision, a solution or something? But Watergate took years.
Yeah, it took. I mean, this, and you know, Robert Mueller is a professional. He is being very methodical about this. I'm just loving to see these dominoes drop one by one as they get closer and closer to the person at the top. What we're seeing here is, if Flynn is going to plead guilty to what he pled guilty to, then that means he has told the special prosecutor something. Mm-hmm. He has ratted on somebody over him. Right. And there really aren't very many people over the national security advisor.
Right.
That's why you have Trump out here going crazy right now, trying to defame the entire FBI, because he knows it's coming. And so his whole strategy is to reduce the credibility of the media, right, to reduce the reality of what truth is, right, and to defame the FBI, to reduce their credibility, so that when the inevitable happens, he can lie and claim that those people had it out for him in the first place and they're just framing him and nothing that really happened. But we all know that he's been in bed with the Russians ever since they paid to bail his butt out of bankruptcy several years ago. That's why we haven't seen his tax return.
And I was about to say, the tax return still remains an issue. Real quick, James, your thoughts.
You know, you had Republicans back in the Watergate era, such as Mac Mathias of Maryland, real Republicans who said, look, this is not right, what's going on in Watergate. But what we need is our Republicans on Capitol Hill to do the same,
right? Mm-hmm.
To say the same thing.
Last one, and I think that this is a great way to end, because this is kind of the way the year began in the entertainment world.
We lost, by the way, but, you know.
Guys, I'm sorry. No,
there's a mistake. Go. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
This is not a joke. I'm afraid they read the wrong thing.
This is not a joke. Moonlight has won Best Picture.
A major mix-up. It occurred at the Oscars back in February. Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway were tasked with handing out the award for Best Picture, but were given the wrong envelope, which led them to mistakenly recognize La La Land. Well, the cast of the musical was already on the stage accepting the Oscar when the correct envelope was uncovered, and the award was then handed to the correct winner, Moonlight. And I must say, Moonlight was a great movie, and it deserved it. But man, oh man, you know, can we get it right?
Yes.
You have one job.
Give them the right envelope.
I don't know. What did we miss? Your OMG story that we didn't talk about, James, real quick.
Oh my gosh. The fact
exactly.
that even though he ran, I thought, was a very subpar campaign in Virginia, Ralph Northam won.
Okay.
I honestly believe Ed Gillespie, on a theoretical campaign-wise, he ran a better campaign. Mm-hmm. But people were so fed up with this president and the mess, particularly in Northern Virginia, that's why Northam won.
What did we miss, Avis, your OMG story that we didn't mention?
The Women's March, the largest political demonstration in history. And the fact that sisters came and took control of that stuff and said, y'all ain't having this without us. So proud of my sisters who took the lead in organizing that historic march.
The Beckification of that.
Absolutely. They squashed Becky. Okay.
Nicole, your thoughts on the story that we didn't mention, your OMG story.
We talked about Puerto Rico a little bit. And I think for me, the biggest shock was the administration, first of all, not even realizing that Puerto Rico was part of the United States to begin with, let alone their delay in sending Puerto Rico the resources and sending FEMA down there to help the people who you know, were suffering because of this hurricane. I mean, how did you not know it's part of the United States? There's seven territories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, there was even a comment about the U.S. Virgin Islands as being another country.
Yes.
And so, you know, certainly geography needs to be an integral part of education in America. And one could argue, particularly if you're running for high office, Congress, Senator, otherwise. Listen, thank you all so very, very much. Nicole Williams, James Wright, and Avis Jones DeWeaver. Thank you all so much for being with us tonight. And have a wonderful 2018. I'm sure it will not be dull. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, December 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.